Alright, so we'll say good morning. Let's begin. So today's daf is Yud Zayin. We are picking up Tess Zayin Amud Beis, two lines up from the bottom. The Kafron. So the Gemara says, now that we discussed yesterday a little bit about Kafron, we discussed about if somebody denies a claim. So Hoil Va'asa Yadan Nima Ba Be Milsa. So the Gemara will say, this is a stylistic approach of the Gemara. Well, sometimes the Gemara will bring up a particular topic that might not be the intended topic of the Sugya, but once we brought it up, let's discuss it. So now that we began to discuss Kafron, let's discuss it a bit further. Do Amrav Yosef Ramin Yumi Amrav Nachman Amrulo, so we'll say, Beis Din said to an individual, say, tein lo. Then we'll say, the Lashonos of here are going to be very important. Look at the last line of Rashi, say, tein lo. Shepasku lo dinam beis din, shetzivu alav la seso. So we'll say, this is talking about a case where Beis Din commanded a person to pay. Beis Din commanded a person to pay. So what happens? Say, tein lo. So they tell the defendant, go and pay the plaintiff. Top of Yud Zayin Odalet. Va'amar Parati. And what happens? The plaintiff says, I paid him. So what happens? Ne'eman. So ultimately, you're believed. Meaning if Beis Din gave you an order to pay, and then you said you paid, so you are believed to say you paid. However, ba malve lichtov. But we'll say, if the lender now comes along and says, I need you, Beis Din, to write for me a shtar for collection. Rashi says, ba malve lifaneinu lichtov lo at karto. I love in Kosovinos. So also remember at Karta we learned in yesterday's daf. So if the Malva comes along and says, please write for me a document of collection, say in Kosovinos, no, we will not write it for the Malva. So we're not writing for the Malva, because we will say, obviously, once we believe the Lova that he paid back, we're not going to write a document, a seizure document, for the Malva to collect. Okay, next. I will say, that halacha is predicated on the idea that when Beis Din orders someone to pay, and they say they paid, we believe they paid. Okay, that's case number one. Next. Chayivat alitino. So we'll say case number two is, Beis Din says to a person, you're chayiv to pay. But we'll say, remember, you notice the lashonos, the difference over here? The first case was what? Say tein lo. Say tein lo is a verdict that is ready to ultimately be executed. Go out and pay. Chayiv atali tein lo is based in kind of rendering their unofficial decision. You are going to be chayiv to go ahead and pay him. Va'amar parati, and ultimately again the individual, we'll call him the borrower, says I paid. Eino ne'eman. We'll say he is not believed. Now why is he not believed? Look at Rashi. This is an incredible yisori. Look at, you see Rashi, eino ne'eman. Rashi says at the end of that Rashi, Ein darko lemaher lefroa at sheyifsiku dino psak gomer. We'll say, the derech of people is, they don't pay things until they have to. So what does this mean? So when Beis Din tells someone, chayiv ataliten lo, you're chayiv, that's not a psak Beis Din. That's Beis Din kind of giving him, here's coming attractions, you're going to be chayiv to pay. But it's not a formal psak Beis Din. We do not assume that people pay their debts before there is a formal psak Beis Din. Therefore, if the borrower claims, I paid, we do not believe him. Eino ne'emon. Ba malve lichtov, kosev enosno. Therefore, I will say, if the malve comes along and says, listen, I want to collect my property, we write him a shtarat karto. We write him a seizure document. Rav Zvid Mishrid Rav Nachman Amr. So Rav Zvid, in the name of Rav Nachman, said, Bein Tseh, we'll say Yud Zayin Amud Aleph 17a, five lines down from the top. So Rav Zvid says, Nei Rav Nachman, Bein Tseh, Tein Lo, Bein Chayiv Atali Tein Lo, whether Beis Din said, go out and pay, which Rav will say is the verdict of Beis Din, or whether Beis Din just simply said, you're going to be Chayiv to pay, which is what we'll call an informal verdict. An informal verdict. What's the halacha? Va'amar parati, and the borrower said, I paid back the money. Ne'eman. He is believed. So we'll say Rav Nachman ultimately holds that Lamaisa, we believe ultimately the borrower when he says that he paid. Ba'amalva, lechtov, ein kosvin, the nosin lo. So we'll say, but these are corollary principles. Once we believe the borrower, therefore if the lender shows up and says, write for me a document that allows me to seize property, obviously we're not going to give that to him. Ela I ika liflog liflugi hachi hu di ika liflugi. Rather, says Rav Nachman, if you want to make a distinction between cases, here is the distinction you should make. Amru lo tsei tein lo. So we'll say, Beis Din said to the borrower, go out and pay the lender. Now remember again, lashon of tsei tein lo is what? Is an informal ruling of Beis Din. Right? Informal. They're telling him, You know, excuse me, I'm sorry, a formal Pesach Beis Din, thank you, is a formal Pesach Beis Din. So if they told him, say, Tainlo, Va'amar Parati, and the borrower said, I paid, Va'idim Me'idin Oso Shelo Paru, oh, and witnesses came along and say, that's what? He didn't pay. So witnesses contradict the borrower, skip the parentheses, Huchzak Kafron La'oso Mamon. It will say, the borrower is considered to be a liar regarding that money. In other words, it will say, if you look at Rashi, Hoksa kafron osa mamon, she'ein ne'aman od alav lomar chayechzarti uparati at shifra be'edim, that he will not be believed to say that he has repaid the debt until when? Until he repays it in the presence of witnesses. So he's considered to be a liar when it comes to that money. Chayiva talitinlo, we both say, listen to this, but if Beis Din didn't give him a formal psak Beis Din, rather just said, you are obligated to return it, right? An informal ruling of Beis Din, then va'amar parati, and the borrower says, I paid it back. Va'idim mi'idin oso shaloparah. And the witnesses claim that he did not pay. The chazar va'amar parati. And then he said, oh no, I'm sorry. Then witnesses came along and said that he did not pay. And then he retracts his original statement and he says, parati. I'm sorry. The chazar va'amar parati. He says again, he restates his same claim, I did pay. Lo hochsa kafron lo samamun. Rabbi says he's not considered to be a liar for that money. Why? My time, because he's simply stalling to try to buy himself some additional time. Sover, he figures, you know what I'll pay? I'll pay when Beis Din tells me I have to pay. So we'll say, Rav Nachman makes a very interesting distinction here. So Rav Nachman's distinction is like this. Rav Nachman says, don't make the distinction between tsay and chayiv. Rather, make the distinction in a case of lying. When a person lies after Beis Din has told him, ordered him to pay, say, and a person lies and says that he did pay, when in fact he didn't pay, he's chuchsa kafran, he's a liar. He's a liar, and therefore he's not believed regarding this money anymore until he pays back in the presence of witnesses. If, however, Beis Din said chayiv, which is an informal psak Beis Din, and he lies, and then Edom comes and shows that he's lying, he's not considered to be a liar. Why? He's just considered to be a staller. So not a liar, just a staller. What's the logic over here? The logic is, since this is not money that I've been formally required to pay by Beis Din, therefore what? Therefore, I'm just trying to buy myself, I'm going to pay it. I'm just trying to buy myself a bit more time. So it says the Gemara.
Why would he be lying when he's sovereign? If the idea is that you're just going to wait, you're just going to buy time until you get the order. When someone gets an order, they should pay.
That is correct.
But if he says, I paid without the order, wouldn't we say, maybe he's telling the truth?
Yes, except remember, this case is where Edom came. Edom contradicted Einachinami. That's why, again, going back, if he claimed that he paid it, we would believe him. The difference over here is there are witnesses who are coming contradicting and saying he didn't pay. So Amar Rabbi Bar Bachana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Manali Biyadecha, Vahala Omer Ein Lecha Biyadikvum, so we'll say another psak of Rabbi Yochanan. Today is Rabbi Yochanan day, right? Another Rabbi Yochanan day. Marli biyadecha. So I go over to Reuven. Reuven, you owe me $1,000. V'halo omer ein lecha biyadi klum. Reuven says, I owe you nothing. Va'idim me'idin also sheyeshlo. And the witnesses testify that Reuven in fact owes me money. V'chazar va'omer parati. So listen to this. So Reuven's story very conveniently changes. It goes from what? He goes from claiming that I don't owe you anything to claiming what? Oh yeah, I did owe you, but I paid you back already. Right? So what's the halacha? Huchzak kafron la'osa mamon. So I'll say, obviously, again, you can't do that. He's considered to be a liar regarding that money. Huchzak kafron means he's an established liar regarding that money. Kiyad de Shabsi Bereid Rabbi Marinos. So we'll say this is like the story of Shabsi, the son of Rabbi Marinos. Kasav la lekal say itzla de milsa biksuvasa vekibla ale. So we'll say he wrote for his daughter-in-law a dowry, not a dowry, but he wrote for her something that he owed her in the ksuva. He secured a ksuva payment for her of a fine woolen garment. Says for me, in this case, we'll say it was the family of the chassan, the father of the chassan, that secured the daughter-in-law's ksuva. And as part of an extra part of the ksuva, he guaranteed for her a fine woolen garment. What happens? Irkis ksuvasa, the girl, the kala, lost her ksuva. Amar lo hayu dvar me'olam. And what happens? Shabsi says, I never promised you any kind of woolen garment. Well, there's documents gone. He decides to have a rain over here. I never promised you any woolen garment. Asu Sadiva Amri in Ksiv Allah. So witnesses come along and say, Shabsi, you're lying. We signed the Ksuva, right? Check the video, right? We signed the Ksuva, we were there, right? And we know that you promised her this fine woolen garment. So Amr Luhu Parati. So what does he claim? He says, you're right, I promised it to her, but in fact, I already gave it to her. Asu Lekamed Reb Chiyar Abbas, I said, the Rat Chiyar Abbas, Amr Luhu Parati. So he said to Shabsi, I'm sorry, you've lost your credibility regarding this cloak. In other words, you can't go ahead and flip-flop like that to go ahead and claim that you never promised it. And then once Edom came and say you did, and then you go ahead and you say you paid it, so of course again you're huchsa kafran, you're an established lie, we don't believe you. So he said, and again, Rashi pointed out the ramification of being an established kafran regarding a certain body of money or a certain claim is you'll only be believed to say that you paid it if you paid it in front of witnesses. That's the ramification. Another statement to Rabbi Yochanan. Chayiv lechavero shvua. If a person was chayiv, a shvua to his friend. Va'amar nishbati. And what happens? And he claims, I swore already. I swore. Va'idim me'idin on social nishba. And witnesses come along and testify that the claimant never swore. So, they skip the parentheses. Huchsa kafran la'osa shvua. So obviously, he's considered to be as an established liar regarding that particular shvua, and of course, can no longer take that shvua. Amruah kameid Rabbi Avo. So they said this over. They said this ruling in front of Rabbi Avo. We'll say first wide line Yedzayin Amud Aleph. So Amruah, he said to them, Mistabru Milsad Rabbi Abin. So what's Rabbi Abin's halacha? Rabbi Abin's quoting this name of Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Abin's halacha seems to be applicable in a case Shenischayiv Shvua Bebezdin. Both said, this is talking about a case where what? Where the litigant became chayiv shvua in Bezdin. Aval chayiv atzmo shvua. But I will say, if he willingly took upon himself a shvua, then ne'eman. He is believed because avid inish demikri va'amar. So what's happening over here? I will say, look at Rashi for just a moment. So actually, before we get to Rashi, remember again, there are two different ways a person could be chayiv shvua. Bezdin can make you chayiv shvua. If you look at Rashi, kishen is chayiv shvua be bezdin. The chayvan the tavo be idum lakaim the very bezdin v'lo ava ino ne'ama lomar od kiyam the achare kim. We'll say so. Rabbi Avin wants to make the following distinction: if you are made chayiv shvua in bezdin, then ultimately, again, the assumption is that shvua takes place in bezdin. Therefore, to claim that you took it and no one knows about it is not going to work. But look at Rashi. But listen to this. The other type of shvua is a person could willingly obligate himself to take a shvua to another party that's claiming something against him. That's what's called a shvua chutz lebeisdin. See, interestingly enough, Rabbi Osei, the Gemara is suggesting is the following. If you were supposed to take a shvua in beisdin, you lied, you said that you took it, witnesses come along and contradict and say you didn't take it, you are huchsa kafran la'osa shvua. You're considered to be a liar for that shvua, and therefore, again, obviously what? You can no longer take that shvua. However, if you promised to take a shvua, if you obligated yourself to take a shvua outside of Beis Din, and you claim that you made it, and witnesses come along and contradict and say, no, you never took it, you're not considered to be a liar legabe that shvua, and you can still take that shvua. Why that distinction? Look at Rashi. Avid inish de mikri va'amar, lo esa mashalo chivuni Beis Din, ela ani ba'atzmi, ve'in zu sarvanos v'charata ela dichia ba'amar. Because we'll say, what's the logic? I could rationalize this. How so? Beis Din never obligated me to take a shvua. So who obligated me to take a shvua? I'm obligating myself. Therefore, again, because this is a self-imposed obligation, all I'm doing is kicking the can down the road. I'm not going to say I'm kicking the can down the road. Instead, I'm going to buy myself some time by claiming I already took the shvua, but I'm not trying to get out of it. I'm just trying to delay it. The logic over here is I feel I have the right to go ahead and kick the can down the road. Why? Because this is a self-imposed liability. Therefore, says Rabbi Abin, in that kind of shvua, even though witnesses show up to contradict what I said, I'm not huchsa kafron, and I can still take that shvua. So the Gemara says, Ahadrua kameid Rabbi Abin. So I will say, after, so, who said this over here? Good, Rabbi Avo. So Rabbi Avo gave this interpretation of Rabbi Avin's statement. They then brought back, Hadrua kameid Rabbi Avin, they then brought back Rabbi Avo's interpretation of Rabbi Avin's statement back to Rabbi Avin. Amar lehu ana nami bebezin amri. Rabbi Avin essentially said, I agree, I concur with that. I also meant that he's only considered to be a huksa kafron in a situation where ultimately, again, it was a bezin imposed shavua. Itmar nami am Rabbi Avin, am Rabbi Lam, Rabbi Yochanan. Also another case. There's also said Rabbi Abin named Rabbi Lai, named Rabbi Yochanan. Haya chayiv lechavero shvua bebezdin. Both say, if I was chayiv a shvua to my friend in Bezdin, v'armer nishpati, and I claimed that I swore, I took the shvua, v'aidim idin also shlo nishpa, and the witnesses come along and claim that he did not swear. So huchsa kafron also shvua. Ultimately, again, he is considered to be an established liar regarding that shvua. Good. Am Rabbi Asi, am Rabbi Yochanan. Hamotzi shtarcho b'shuk. Both say, back to lost shtaros. Back to last lost shtaros. So I go ahead and I find a loan document in the marketplace. Listen to this. The kasab or handpick. So also remember again, what's our handpick? Our handpick is a document of certification, right? That says that Beis Din looked into this transaction and upheld the validity or authenticity of this transaction. The kasav bozmano bobayov. Oh, now this is interesting. The shtar is dated today. The shtar is dated today. So again, so it's dated 11th of Tishrei. So there are two things. Number one, I find that the shtar is a henpik, which means again, it's a valid shtar. Number two, it's mamish dated today. Rashi says, the kasav bozmano bayom bayom shenimtza nichtov. 11th of Tishrei. So what's the halacha? Yachzir lebailim. Oh, in this case, Rabbi said you can return the shtar to the creditor. Why? Imishum kasav lelavos velo lava. So I'll say, if you want to say, because what should we be concerned about? Maybe he'll say, I should have returned it to the creditor. Why? Maybe he drafted the document, but he never actually loaned the money. That can't be why. Why? Oh, hakasav bahempik. It's validated, which indicates to us that the transaction occurred. Imishum piron. So maybe he'll be concerned that, well, maybe the lova, maybe the bar already paid back the debt. That can't happen. Why? The priya basyoma lo chashinan. Now, we'll say, we are not choshesh that people pay back their debts on the same day they borrow the money. Right? That's not a chashash we have. So therefore, because essentially, again, we're not worried that the lova paid it back, and we're also not worried that and we know the transaction happened, therefore we give the document back to the creditor. So the Gemara says, Omerli Rabbi Zir, Rabbi Asi, Miyamar Rabbi Yochanan Hachi. So Rabbi Zir said, Rabbi Asi, did Rabbi Yochanan really say this? Ha atu da'amet mishay di Rabbi Yochanan. Yet you are the one who said the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Shtar shalava bo upara bo, ema chozer v'lava bo. Well, this is actually a very interesting halacha. If I lend Reuven $1,000 with a shtar, and let's say then he pays me back the money, he wants to borrow another $1,000. So I say to myself, you know what? We both say, let's just use the same shtar. You're not allowed to do that. You cannot reuse loan documents. Why? Shekvar nimchal shibudo. Because this is actually a very interesting halacha. Because remember, a shtar, remember how we pass in halacha l'maisa? Every shtar has a shibud karkos, right? Every shtar comes with a lien clause, unless, of course, it's explicitly waived in the shtar. So when a loan is paid back, the lien is lifted. The lien is lifted. Therefore, if you try to lend money with the same shtar, so technically speaking, it might work, but there's absolutely no lien against real property. So Bo said, let's analyze this case, says the Gemara. Amos. So what's the timeline of these events? Ilema lamachar uliyomachara. So we'll say, if you want to say, I lent Reuven money on the 11th of Tishrei, right? And what happens? Let's say he paid it back, and then on the 12th of Tishrei, he wants to borrow another $1,000. And the Gemara is telling me, I can't use the previous shtar. Of course I can't use the previous shtar. My area, Shekvar Nimchal Shibudo, who cares about the lien? There's a bigger issue. Tepukle, Tahavale Muktam. Both said that's the shtar muktam. Shtar muktam is a predated shtar. Utnan, shtari chov hamuktam. And both said, remember, why is a predated shtar possible? Because remember, the lien on real property begins as of the date in the shtar. In this case, the money wasn't actually lent until the 12th of Tishrei. That document says the 11th of Tishrei. That is a pre-loan lien. Why is that illegal? It's illegal, Bosa, because remember, if I sold property to someone on the 11th, technically speaking, that property is not encumbered by the debt that the borrower took on the 12th. But according to the shtar, it is. So that's called the shtar muktam. It's called the predated shtar. So he must say, utnan shtari chava muktam and psulin. So predated shtar is apostle. So we'll say, so that can't. So therefore, again, forget about the lien. There's a problem with the date. El alav biome. Oh. We'll say, rather, the only way this case works is by listening to this wild case. The case is, that's not so wild. The case is, I lend Reuven $1,000 on the 11th of Tishrei, right? And what happens? What happens? Next step, he pays me back on the 11th of Tishrei. Now he wants another loan on the 11th of Tishrei. And now what the Gemara is saying is, even though the document, technically speaking, has the correct date, because the second loan is also going to happen on the 11th of Tishrei, I still can't use that document. Why? Because once Reuven pays back the first debt, the lien is forgiven. But for our purposes, what do you see from here? Ela biome alma pari in shibiome. We'll say, what do you see? What you see is that people apparently do pay back their debts, even on the same day. Rabbi Yochanan said before, no one ever pays back their debt on the same day the money is borrowed. You see from this case that people do pay back their debts on the day that it's borrowed. To which the Gemara says, 1 second. I'm like, Rabbi Yochanan says, I don't mean that no one ever pays back their debt on the day that it's borrowed, but, because the Gemara says, So, okay, yes, could it happen? Absolutely could happen. Is it the norm? No, it's not the norm, and it's not the regilos, it's not the normative case. Rav Kahana Amar, Kishachayim Moda. So let's go back for just a moment. So what Rabbi Yochanan says is the following. Therefore, going back to our original case, I go ahead and I find a loan document in the shuk, and the document number one has the henpik, right? Number one, it's been validated, right? It's been validated. Number two, what? Number two, it's dated that day. So Rabbi Yochanan Paskin, I can give it back to the creditor. Why? Because I don't have to be concerned that the loan transaction never happened because it's a handpick. And I'm also not choshesh that it was paid back. Why? Because under normal circumstances, people don't pay back their debts on that day. Rav Kahana has a different understanding of the Brayso. I'm Rav Kahana Omar, Kishachayev Moda. We're talking about a case over here at Waterboside. The reason I could return the document in that case we just mentioned is why? Because the lover, the borrower, admits that he still owes the money. So what's the chiddush there? Rabbosai, that's always the easiest case. If I find a loan document and the borrower admits that he still owes the money, that's easy. Everyone will agree that what? I could return the document to the borrower. So ma'adotemos, listen to this. What would I have thought? Hi mifra pare, maybe the borrower already repaid the money. V'hai deka amr lo parati, mishum dekaboy mehadala misvebezim na'achrisi. So I might have thought the following. Maybe, what? Maybe the borrower already repaid the money. Maybe he already repaid the money. But what happens? Why is he claiming that he didn't repay the money? Because he wants the document to go back to the malva. Why? Because he wants to borrow a second time. So why does he have to do this whole thing? V'lifshite desafra chayish. He doesn't want to have to pay the sofer again to draft a new document. So here's the issue. If he says, I didn't pay back already. Therefore he says, I did not pay back. Give the documents back to the Malva. The Malva that has in his possession, he can use it again to re-lend money, and everybody saves money on the sofer. When you say everybody, means the lender, but the borrower saves money on the sofer. Kamash Malon, the imkain Malva Gufe Lo Shava. I will say, Kamash Malon, that we're not choshesh for this. Why? Because even if the Lova wanted to do this, the Malva would not do this. Why? Savar Shamar Be Rabbanon, because it says the rabbis are going to hear about this. Umaf Sidili, and they're going to fine me. And if the rabbis find out that I'm pulling this kind of shtick with the shtar, they're not going to be happy with me, and they're going to fine me. In other words, remember, in a case like this, the malva has no vested interest really in lying in this situation for one simple reason. Because remember, who pays for the drafting of the document? We saw this in yesterday's daf. That's the borrower. Right, the borrower does that. So for the malva, in general, both of people don't cheat unless there's some kind of benefit for them. So lemaisa, in this case over here, there's no benefit for the malva to go ahead and lie about this. And therefore, lemaisa, again, we're not choshesh for it. The Gemara goes weiter. So we'll say, why is this different than the following case? So now, also what we're assuming is that the malva is not going to enter into collusion with the lover over the shtar, because the malva is afraid that if the rabbis find out, they're going to fine him. So now, why is this different than the following case? We'll say, if a person finds the shtar chov, remember again, we learned this case before, I find a loan document in the shuk. If it has a lien against real property, I can't return it. And we set it up as a case of, even if the borrower admits that he still owes the money, Umishum, what's the reason we don't return it? Umishum shema kasav lalavos b'nisan v'lo lava ad tishrei v'asila mitraf l'kuchos minisan v'ad tishrei shelo kidin. Because we are concerned that what? Since it has achrayis nechasim, I'm concerned that even though it's dated what? In Nisan, maybe the money wasn't actually lent until Tishrei, and if you return the document ultimately to the lender, he'll be able to collect encumbered properties as a Nisan, when in fact he's not entitled until Tishrei. Faloam Rinan, and we don't say in this case, De Imkein Malve Gufei Lo Shavik. We'll say, why don't we say, we don't say in this case, that now the Malve himself would not engage in this. The Amrle Kosov Shtara Achrini B'Tishrei, the Dilma Shami Rabbanon Umaf Sidili. So once again, in this case over here, we do assume that the Malva would act illegally, and we don't say that the Malva says, nah, I'm not going to use this shtar if I didn't really lend the money until Tishrei. I'm only going to use the shtar that's dated Tishrei, because if the rabbis find out, they're going to patch me. Why don't we say that in this case? To which the Gemara says, Amri, it's a very simple reason. Hasam mishum de islei revacha de katar v'l'guchos minisam va Tishrei. Meinach nechale v'lo amr v'lo midi. So we'll say, hacha, kevan de lesli ravcha de sof sof shtara idna kasiv ma'ika dikatarif dikarif lukuchos pishtar shenim chal shibudo lo shavik. I will say, very simply stated, the malva is only going to cheat when he gets something from it. So if in fact the loan document was late, was dated Nisan, but the money wasn't actually lent until Tishrei, bless you. So in that case, again, it serves the malva's interest to lie. Why? Because he's got liens going back now to Nisan instead of Tishrei. So yeah, people lie when it absolutely benefits them. Do we have to be choshesh? We have to be choshesh that the malva is going to say, oh yes, that's my loan document, even though the loan transaction didn't actually take place until Tishrei. Rabosa, in this case over here, again, the malva doesn't get anything extra by lying. By claiming, again, Rabosa, if the lover already paid the debt, by claiming that the lover didn't pay the debt, so that the lover could save money on not having to go ahead and what? Go to the sofer again to redraft a new document, the malva doesn't get anything from that. Because the malva doesn't get anything from that, we automatically assume, therefore, that he's not lying. Fine, so we'll say, so bottom line, by the way, bottom line is the same, which is if you find the shtarchov in the shtok, and the shtarchov has the henpik, and it's dated that day, the halacha is you could return it to the lender, because again, we're not choshesh that the loan was never executed because it's a henpik, and also we're not choshesh that it was repaid. Why? Because the statistical probability is that people do not repay money on the day that it's borrowed. I'm Rabbi Chiba, Abba, I'm Rabbi Yochanan. It is, but who do you return it to? That's the question. We want to return it, but the shaykh is, who do you return it to? We'll say last line, Yizayin Amud Aleph. Had to almost say, appreciate it. Last line, Yizayin Amud Aleph. We're not going to see this again for 7.5 years. Mamish, like, it's Kashan like Pradaskan. I'm saying you can see it again. You can chazer it if you want to, right? You can chazer. I didn't mean to be so dramatic. Even though some people chazer, the probability is you're not going to see it again. So Amra Bichiyavar Abba Amra Biyochanan. Hatoin Achar Masa Bezin. The boss says another interesting case. Wait, don't turn yet. Rashi. Hatoin Achar Masa Bezin. Rashi says, Davar Shuhutnai Bezin Kigum Ksuva. Umazon ha'isha va'abaros ha'toin va'amar parati shelo be'edim lo'amar klom. I will say, a ma'isa beizdin is any financial obligation that is put upon a person by beizdin. Now look at, for examples of that are ksuva, for example, and all the other examples listed in Rashi. If a person says that he paid that debt, but there are no witnesses to go ahead and witness that claim, he is not believed. In other words, the Gemara is saying over here is any time you owe something because of a beis din liability, that has to be paid in front of witnesses. So the Gemara says, Lo amar klom, I'm a beis. My time, but what's the reason? Kol ma'isa beis din, kiman dinokit shtara biyadei dami. Because we'll say, whenever someone is owed money because of an entitlement through beis din, it's as if they hold a document, as if they have a shtar to back up that claim. So the Gemara says, so this is actually very important. So what this means is, a man comes along and says, I paid my wife's ksuva, right? And she says, obviously if she agrees, fine. But she says, no, you didn't. If he doesn't have Aiden to back up that claim, if he doesn't have Aiden to back up that claim, he's not believed. That boss, now you understand why that's a chiddush. So you say to yourself, what's the chiddush? That is a big chiddush. Correct. Meaning, because normally we say, Hamotzi mechaveiro alav harayu. if you want to extract money from someone, the burden of proof is upon the extractor. So if I come over to you, I say, owe me $1,000, you say, fine, that's okay, I don't, but prove it, prove it. Suppose I came over here, the woman is the extractor, right? She wants her ksuva, she's the extractor. He's claiming I paid it. No. Not when it comes to a ma'isa Beis Din. When it comes to ultimately something you owe, because Beis Din put that responsibility upon you, you have to pay that in front of witnesses. And if you haven't paid it in front of witnesses, we don't care that you claim you paid it, we don't believe you. So the Gemara says, my time, it's incredible. My time, I appreciate that. Shh, that was good. I backed it up. You know what I'm saying? It was good. My time, come, I said, Beis Din, command the Nakit Shtarabi Adedim. Because the Bible says, whenever you have a liability from Beis Din, so the claimant, I don't know if that's the right term, but John, the person to whom the money is owed is as if they hold the Shtar from Beis Din. Amarli, Rabbi Kibar, Abel Rabbi Yochanan, listen to this. Everybody's getting all excited about this halacha. So Rabbi Chiba, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi. So remember, this is Rabbi Yochanan who said this. Rabbi said, today is all Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan says this. So Rabbi said, you know, like sometimes like a great chiddush. So it comes along, Rabbi Chiba says, Rabbi, I don't mean to burst your bubble, but this is an explicit Mishnah. I mean, we learned this already. So what's the halacha? Zuho tzia get the enima ksuva. So we'll say, if a woman produces her get, but she does not produce a ksuva document, so gova ksuvasa. Even in the absence of her ksuva, she is still entitled to collect her ksuva. So what do you see from here, Abosai? You see from here that any time you have a responsibility to pay money, because Beis Din mandates it, it's as if the claimant is in possession of a shtar. The harai, the woman shows up to Beis Din, proves that she's divorced. There's no record of any type of ksuva payment. She is entitled to her ksuva. So here you see that the woman is like someone who holds a shtar for a claim for her ksuva. Amarle, so essentially you see over here, Rabbi Abbas is Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi, I don't mean to burst your bubble, but the Mishnah is pretty explicit. The Mishnah is pretty explicit in telling you that this is the halacha. So Rabbi Abbas is Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Abbas is an incredible yisod. Amarle, ilav didaloy l'cha chaspa lo mashkachas marganisa tusa. Had I not removed the pottery shard, would you have ever gone ahead and found the jewel? In other words, we'll say, what is that? It's such a beautiful solution. What Rabbi Yochanan was saying is, I know it's a Mishnah, but you would not have understood the mechanics of the Mishnah had I not made my statement. In other words, we'll say, if we would have just read that Mishnah, and I would have heard a case of a woman shows up in Beis Din and goes ahead and what has her get and says, my husband owes me my ksuva, I would have automatically thought that's what? Hamotzi mechaver alav haraya. Husband says he paid it. She says, no, you didn't. Woman, you want to go ahead and extract money from your ex-husband. That's fine. The burden of proof is upon you. Therefore, Rabbi Yochanan espouses the principle. And the principle is anytime you owe money, because Beis Din mandates it, it's as if the claimant to that money has a shtar, and therefore you have to pay back. You're only believed if you paid back with Eidim. Oh, now that Rabbi Yochanan said that, I see the jewel in the Mishnah. What's an incredible yisod? So Rabbi Yochanan says to his Talmud, only because I said the principle that I said, do you understand the Mishnah? Beautiful. Beautiful. Amar Abaye, my marganisa. So Abaye says, well, what's the jewel? So we'll say, Abaye is still being a little bit complicated over here. So I said, so what? I don't understand. What exactly is the jewel over here? I mean, what's the jewel in the Mishnah? Dilma b'makom she'in kosvin ksuva askinon. Maybe the Mishnah, Bosai, again, this Mishnah that says that if a woman shows up with a get, without a ksuva, that halacha is we make the husband pay the ksuva. Maybe that's talking about a specific case of what? In a place where they don't write ksuvas. Also remember this from our ksuva days. Not every place wrote ksuvas. In some places they actually did not write a document. Technically speaking, you don't have to write a document. So maybe that's the case of the Mishnah. Mishnah is talking about a locale where they don't write ksuvas. So a woman shows up with a get, she's entitled to her ksuva. The Gemara says, the get, hainu ksuvasa. Because in reality, in a place where they don't write a ksuva, Rabbo is saying, her get is her ksuva, which is another way of saying, when she produces a get, that creates her ability to collect her ksuva. However, aval b'makom shekosvin ksuva. But in a place where they normally do write a ksuva, maybe we would say, inekito ksuva gavya, ilo lo. Right? We'll say, but in a place where they do write a ksuva, I would say what? Only if she produces a ksuva does she get to collect. If not, not. As we'll say, maybe the Abai is saying, Rabbi Yochanan, maybe the Mishnah is not a proof to your principle at all. I mean, Rabbi Yochanan's principle is that whenever you are owed money through a Maisa Beis Din, it's as if you are in possession of a shtar backing up your claim, even though what? You don't have a shtar. Right? And yet, and Rabbi Yochanan was trying to bring this Mishnah, a woman shows up with her get, Beis Din allows her to collect the ksuva. But I said, one second, maybe the Mishnah is talking about a place, a situation where, it's talking about a locale, where they don't write ksuvas. So therefore, again, in those places, in those communities, the way a woman would collect her ksuvas, she'd show up with her get, and that would entitle her to collect her ksuva. But in a place where they do write ksuvas, in order for a woman to collect her ksuvas, she would have to what? Furnish the document. And Rabbi Yochanan, in fact, if that's the case, it wouldn't back up your assertion at all. So the Gemara says, Hadram Rabbaye, lav milsihi da'amri. Abaye then retracted his statement. He said, you know what? Scratch what I just said. Said, by the way, you understand the incredible Musr in that, right? The incredible Musr. Abaye is on record, for all eternity as saying, I made a mistake. I'll say an incredible din in humility. You know, the Gemara Masechta Shabbos brings down, Lamad Lashon Chalomar Eini Yodea. I have to teach my tongue to say I don't know. It's hard for us to accept that we don't know things, and it's even harder for us to accept the fact that we've made mistakes. Here at Abaye is such an incredible Musar. He says, you know what I just said? I know it sounded really good, but you know what? No, scratch it. Lav Nosi, Da Amri, Di Yisak Adai Tcha Mokum Shein Kosum, and Ksuv Asking On. Because the Maisa, if you want to interpret the Mishnah as dealing with a case of where they don't write a ksuva, about b'makom shekosvin ksuva, but if in a place where they do write a ksuva, inakita ksuvas ksuva gabia ilo lo, and you would say in a place where she does write a ksuva, it's only if she brings her ksuva, then yes, she could collect, and if not, not. Amona mina irusin b'may gabia. So we'll say then, how would a woman who? So again, Sabai is saying, I tried to make a distinction. I tried to say that maybe the Mishnah doesn't back up Rabbi Yochanan's assertion, because maybe the Mishnah is talking about a case where they don't write ksuvas, but in a place where they do write ksuvas, in order for her to collect the ksuvas, she has to bring her document. Abaye says, that can't be, and I'll tell you why. Because if it's only if you show up with a ksuva that you could collect, what do you do with the case of a woman who's widowed from Erisin? How would a woman go ahead who's widowed from Eris, and how does she collect her ksuva? Because I also remember again, the assumption is what? My gavio be'ede misas baal. How does a woman, remember I will say, a woman who goes ahead and is widowed from Erisin, she does not yet have what? A document, right? There's no ksuva yet. Because the ksuva is written, again, the actual ksuva itself is written by Nisuin. Yet, we'll say, and we'll discuss where this comes from, the Gemara is assuming that a woman, even in Erisin, has a ksuva entitlement, even though she doesn't yet have the document. So how does an almana from Erisin collect her ksuva? Well, Bepashas Rabbos, I be'edei misa sabal. She has to bring witnesses that her husband died. I lit on belema parate. Why can't the yershim of the now deceased husband, why can't they claim, we already paid, right, our father paid it. Our father prepaid the ksuva. Maybe you'll say they can claim that. If that's the case, then what did the chachamim, how did the chachamim benefit the woman through their takana? So listen to this is wild. So Abaye says that I know I was wrong. You know how I know I was wrong? It has to be that a ksuva is collectible even without a document. Because if a ksuva is not collectible, if a ksuva is only collectible with a document, then how could an amana from Erisin ever collect her ksuva? After all, an almana from Erisin doesn't have a document, because document is not written until later. And again, if she needs a document, then why can't the yershim of the now deceased husband just simply say, we don't have to pay her anything. Our father prepaid her during her lifetime. Elamai must be, that when you have an entitlement from Beis Din, it is as if you hold the shtar in your hand, even if what? Even if you don't. And that's why an almana from Erisin has the ability ultimately again to collect her ksuva as long as she furnishes proof about the death of her husband. And I will say, if the inheritors of the now deceased husband want to say that their father prepaid the ksuva, that's why they can make that claim, but the obligation of, the burden of proof is upon them. And therefore, again, Abbas say, Rabbi Yochanan's original statement remains intact. Rabbi Yochanan's original statement that anytime there's a Maisa Beis Din, anytime you are entitled to money through an act of Beis Din, it is as if you are in possession of a shtar.
What is the Amana from Erisin?
I'm sorry?
What is an Amana from Erisin?
you give a woman, a man gives a woman a ring, harayat mikudesh asleep at the ba'azu, erisin. He dies. He dies. They never had nisuin. So they never lived together, no chuppah, no yichud, no sheva brachas. I'm sorry? Oh, so says the Gemara, so says the Gemara, good, Baruch Shekivanta, what a way to start the year. Mamish Mechadin. Says the Gemara, Amalim Akashish Rei Dach Ashley, Va'amalim Ena Erosin Dilsek Suv Menolan. Oh, right? So how do you know? I don't understand. The whole discussion is presupposing that what? That an Amana from Erosin gets a Ksuva. I don't know, I never heard of that before. How do you know that a woman who is widowed from Erosin, that she has a Ksuva? Zobo says, again, remember, so just understand, we do everything together today, but just understand again that we know this from our Kedushin days. Erosin, man gives a woman an item of value, affects transactional level of marriage. They are legally married, but cannot live together. Nisuin, chuppa, yichud, sheva brachas, that's Nisuin, full man and wife. Everyone agrees after Nisuin, of course she has a Ksuva. The Yerana tells us, the Gemara talks about over here, as if everybody agrees that she has a Ksuva from Erosin also. So now ask, the Gemara asks Mar Kashisha, Reid Rav Kisla, to Rav Ashi, how do we know that an Almana from Erosin, in fact, has a Ksuva? Someinolon, Ilema Mehadisnan, maybe you'll say it's from the following, Nis Armala Onis Garsha, Beimina Erosin, Beimina Nisuin, go. Gova esakol. So maybe you'll say the following, that the Mishnah says, if a woman was widowed or divorced, whether she was widowed or divorced, from Erusin or from Nisuin, gova esakol, she collects everything. People say, now look at Rashi, just a moment, gova esakol, beg suva shel tanai beizen, dahinu mara la'amonu masayin lubsula, bein tosefes. She collects everything in our bosom. Remember, again, we remember from our ksuvas days, there's ikr ksuva, which for a basula is masayim, for a non-basula is a mana. And Tosefis, anything else the husband throws in there. Dilma, Hecha de Kasavla. So we'll say, so first of all, from that Mishnah, you see explicitly that what? It says that if a woman is widowed or divorced, even from what? Even from Erusin, she collects her Ksuva. So explicit Mishnah, that she's collecting a Ksuva even from Erusin. This is 1 second, hold on. Dilma, Hecha de Kasavla. Maybe Rabbi said that's talking about a case where what? Where the husband went out of his way to obligate himself for his wife who's in Arus. In other words, it could be that Me'ikar Adin, there is no ksuva for an arusa. If a husband chooses to go ahead and obligate himself to a ksuva for his wife who's in arusa, that's his prerogative. He can do that if he wants to, but that's not a ma'aseh beis din. So maybe when the Mishnah says over here that if a woman is widowed or divorced from Erusin, she's owed the entire ksuva, maybe that's talking about a case where he decided to obligate himself, but who says that that's an automatic entitlement? So 1 second, that doesn't make sense. Because if the husband obligated himself to pay her the ksuva from Erusin, and then he dies, or he divorces her, then obviously he has to, she's paid that ksuva. If he obligated himself, of course he has to pay it. What's the chiddush? La fuki mid Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria. I will say it comes to exclude the opinion of Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria. Why? Damar shelo kasav la ela amanas lekonsa. So, listen to this. This is amazing. Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria is of the opinion that even when a man goes ahead and what? Even when a man goes ahead and writes his arusa ksuva, he never means it to be chal just in erusin. He writes her the ksuva during erusin with the expectation of what? With the expectation, ultimately, again, of getting married, nisuin. And therefore, again, if Nisuin does not happen, he's not chayiv for the ksuva as of Erusin. Therefore, the Gemara suggests over here that perhaps the Mishnah is coming to exclude that opinion. And the Mishnah is saying that if a man obligated himself to go ahead and what? To go ahead and give a ksuva to his arusa wife, then Enoch Inami, again, he's obligated to do so. What's the chiddush? To teach you that we don't paskin like Rebbe Elazar ben Azaria, that ksuva was not given with the expectation of marriage, rather that ksuva was given with the expectation of erusin. And even if Nisuin does not materialize, the husband or his estate are still going to be chayef to give it. So we'll say, but I just tell you, just so you should know, this actually has major halacha l'maaseh ramifications. Where does this come up? This comes up, unfortunately, in cases of broken engagements. Is there an obligation in a case of broken engagement for a woman to return the engagement ring or not? So fascinating halacha. So we'll say, so again, so, and by the way, it's not just engagement ring. It's also, let's say again, couples dating, couple's dating or they're engaged even, it gives her this gift, that gift, the engagement doesn't work out, is the girl obligated to return the gifts? So we'll say, so the way the Paskin contemporarily is, an engagement ring absolutely has to be returned. Because an engagement ring is really what Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is saying, is a gift that's given with the expectation and understanding that a couple's going to get married. No one gives a gift like that, lemaisa, again, just to say, hi, how are you? Right? That is with the expectation they get married. Other smaller gifts, so the Paskin bring down, according to many, one is permitted to keep. What one should do in that situation is a different discussion. But lamais again, that's Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. So we'll say, deker nami diktani, go ve'esak. All right, you know, we'll say, we'll stop over here. We'll stop over here for today. One more line. Deker nami, we'll say, now we can back this up. We can back this up, that this is talking about a case where the husband obligated himself in Erisin, but it's not a default obligation. Diktani, go ve'esak ho. It says she collects everything. I amit bishlama the cost of law. So, what does it mean that if she divorces her or he dies from Erusin, that she collects everything? See, if you want to say it's a case where he obligated himself, and maybe he obligated himself in a whole bunch of stuff, then I understand why she gets everything. So the Gemara says, but if it's a case where he did not obligate himself, ultimately, again, to pay her anything, top of Yud Ches Amud Alef, my gova es hakol, what does it mean that she gets everything? Mana umasayim hu de isla, she only gets mana umasayim. We'll say, so we'll stop over here, so just understand where we're leaving off. Where we're leaving off right now is the Gemara, Rabbi Yochanan made it sound, Abaye and others made it sound, or I should say Abaye, made it sound like a given that an amana collects ksuva from Erusin. The Gemara then brings a Mishnah to support that assertion. The Mishnah says that whether a woman was widowed or divorced from Erusin or from Nisuin, gova es hakol, she collects the entirety of her ksuva. Abaye brought that as a proof to his assertion. What the Gemara now has successfully done is said that what? That Mishnah cannot be a proof. Why? Because that Mishnah we could easily set up as a case of where what? The husband voluntarily obligates himself in a ksuva for his arusa wife. And the Gemara just brought a diuk that supported that assertion. Therefore, we're still left with the question, Abaye, from where do you know that an arusa has an automatic entitlement to ksuva? And the Gemara will continue that tomorrow.